This week's Last Comic Standing recap is sponsored in part by TrueCar, because when you're making a big purchase like buying a new car, you want and expect a transparent buying process. And that's exactly what you get with TrueCar, because you can go shopping for a brand new car without even having to leave the comfort of your house. Because with TrueCar.com and the TrueCar mobile app, you're able to see all the cars that are available and pick whatever features you want and see exactly what you would pay for those cars, and know that you would get a great deal, just like the kind that you get when you're Miss Pat shopping for pots at the store. Because with TrueCar, not only can you configure the car you want and how you want it, but you can see what other people are paying for the same car you're looking for, down to the zip code. Even if the zip code is Atlanta and you're in the midst of making all sorts of zombie shows, you know what you can expect to pay for that car. It's an extremely transparent process. And then once you decide on the car you want, you can lock in guaranteed savings on average over $3,000 off MSRP. And you'll be connected with a trusted TrueCar certified dealer that will honor your savings without a negotiation. So when you're ready for a new transparent car buying experience, save time, save money, never overpay. Download the TrueCar app today. Coming to you live from my in-laws' basement, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who decided on a career in podcasting after getting an art school rejection letter, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our weekly Last Comic Standing recap. I am Rob Cesternino. It's the semifinals of Last Comic Standing 2015, the fifth week of the show, and here with me to talk about the five people who have advanced, the five people you meet in the Last Comic Standing finals. Here is, give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
Was that a Mitch Albom reference?
Yes.
Fantastic. I love it. If only the show aired on Tuesdays, it could have gotten a 2-for-1.
Yes. Coming up next week, we'll talk about Tuesdays with Shang Wang.
Oh, man. That might be his sitcom if he makes it on.
Yes. How you doing, Mike?
I'm great. It's my birthday week, Rob. I cannot think of a better way to usher in the age of 26 by talking about Last Comic Standing with you.
Happy damn birthday, Mike.
Thank you very much. I unfortunately had to do dishes on the day of, but you know what? That's very little to complain about in a sea of well wishes. And I get to celebrate this weekend. I'll probably hit the town and probably not hit the town in the way that woman Brian Kellen was talking to did. But still, it'll be a lot of fun.
Good to hear. I am currently still on the road. I'm visiting family this week back in New York. I will be back for the next week for the second part of the semifinals back in my studio. Looking forward to that and the climate control that comes along with that.
Yes, sorry on behalf of the East Coast for the humidity that has pervaded us, but hey, at least it's not storming. I've seen flood warnings, but it doesn't look like it looks like very dry out there.
Yes, I'm currently recording from my wife's childhood bedroom, which has become a area of storage at my wife's parents' house. So there's all sorts of fun stuff, and maybe we'll get into some of that along the way here today.
Oh, fantastic. A virtual tour. This is everything I want in a podcast and more.
More creepy dolls than you can shake a stick at.
Oh, my God.
All right. So, Mike, this was the semifinals this week, and I really felt like I understood everything that was going on, that there was 20 people that we were going to see in 1 hour of television. Five of them were going to advance. I felt like there was real tension. I felt like the people that got through were really good, and I really thought this was a strong hour, probably the strongest hour of Last Comic Standing so far to date in season, whatever number of season this is.
So, yeah, season 9, this was...
we'll just say in 2015.
Yes, in the year 2015. They do that with the BBUK nowadays.
Yes.
I completely agree. Absolutely fantastic episode. I will say I agree with about 80% of the people they sent through, but that's a significantly better proportion than it was last week, for example. But, man, really strong work from everybody, with the exception of that one montage where everyone kind of got crapped on by the judges. I feel like everyone really bought strong work. And as Keenan said, it was all about trying to outdo your last set. And I feel like not everyone may have accomplished that, but a lot of people butted up right to the edge there of trying to repeat their success.
Well, for me, I feel like they really figured this out, because all the people that got through, I feel like we all know their story particularly well. They were all featured prominently. Nobody got through that was a montage person, especially in the montages from this episode. But I don't think any of these five people were montage people from the first time around. So
no.
The montage curse holds true, at least for round one of the semifinals. So I feel like it was, I'm really excited to see the five people that they chose move on to the round of 10.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I believe four out of these five that made it through also got a video package in the first round as well. And I know a great friend of the podcast, Molly Shock, is actually an editor on Last Comic Standing, and I got an opportunity to talk to her about a few things. And she said that, like, they technically made video packages for all of the top 10, and they just selectively choose which one to air. So for all we know, there is one of Francisco Ramos out there somewhere. But yeah, they totally got enough exposure. It was interesting. I feel like they sort of stratified the editing this episode to be like almost on four different levels, because you had
four different levels.
Because you had the people who had did their set and also had the feedback from Wanda. They had their one-on-one. You had just the regular people that did their set. You had the people who got a montage, like one or two jokes, but then got judges' comments at the end. And then you got people that just got flat out montaged. So like they took the typical tiering that they do, and they sort of extended it into this bigger cast system.
Yeah, it's a little hard for me to tell who were the people that were in the 20 tonight. I feel like there were some people that, I don't know if we saw 20 comedians go during this night, but I feel like, did you run a count on that? Did we see all 20 people, at least one thing of them?
I don't think we saw one thing of all 20 people, but I think we did see 20 people, because like that montage that I talked about before, which was just judges' constructive criticism, we saw probably at least four people that didn't actually tell a joke. We just saw the judges talk to them.
Yeah.
So I guess if we count them, I think it stacks up to 20.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I'd love to see the list of who exactly we saw. I know it happened all so quickly, but we'll do our best to piece it all together. So why don't we just go ahead and start off with the first set of the night. And of course, these people that we saw in the very beginning, we got to see them talking with Wanda. Here comes Wanda Sykes, that she's back. She's the executive producer of the show, and she's working with a couple of the comedians. And we see her working with, in this montage, we see her working with Taylor Tomlinson.
Mm-hmm.
And she does the joke about how even Hitler had a girlfriend. And Wanda Sykes tells her, no Hitler joke. That's been done.
Well, Taylor definitely shows her age now with her ability to defy her elders.
Yeah, Taylor Tomlinson was really hung up on Hitler and his girlfriend.
Well, I mean, I guess she was playing to the right crowd, because we'll talk about it later, but Norm absolutely loved it. So I guess that's a point where the two of them disagree.
Yeah. Also, she gave notes in terms of just getting to the jokes faster and working with Clayton English in terms of trying to get him to be likable. Don't be an angry guy. So that Wanda had some good notes.
Yeah, and I sort of segueing here into her comments towards Clayton. I mean, first of all, I think she had a lot of spot on comments. And I remember last year when she did it with Amy Schumer, she was very spot on with that stuff as well. So that proves her expertise in this category. But I agree with her in terms of Clayton, because Clayton, the stuff that he was discussing in his set can be very incendiary. I mean, racism is a big topic, specifically in our country these days. And it's tough to not be angry about those types of things. But I agree with her that, like, you want to become more relatable and more likable. You know, I don't think there are many comics that come out onto the stage on Last Comic Standing and are like a Lewis Black type, where they're so overtly angry that it's funny. So there's a certain way you can play anger. But I do like that Clayton was able to kind of mitigate his anger a bit to make himself come off a bit more likable.
Yeah. So let's talk about Clayton English.
Yeah, which is interesting. Molly told me that there's a team of like 10 editors working on every episode, and they all edit different facets of the episode, like the montages. Someone works on the judges' comments. Someone works on someone's regular sets. And that definitely shows, considering that Clayton English was the very last person we saw in the invitationals last week, and he is the very first person we see in the semifinals this week. So that's a good sign that there are two different people editing this.
Bookends. bookended yeah. Clayton English. And so he talks about how his solution to any sort of racial divide that we have in this country is that black people and white people should hang out together more, just like he goes and does extreme sports with his white friends. that his white friend needs to do black people extreme sports.
Yes, which consists of apparently getting in a car with no license, no registration, and like a broken taillight, and seeing if you can drive from his part of the neighborhood to the rich part of the neighborhood.
Now, hold on, Mike. Is this a stereotype that all white people do extreme sports?
If it is, I believe neither you or myself fall into that category. So,
and all white people are named Scott.
Yeah, well, somebody, Francisco Ramos will also use the white name Skyler later on as well. So I guess it's those SK names that are stereotypical white names.
I guess so. So he says that the... In Clayton English has said, he talks about how black people extreme sports are driving with no license, no registration, and one headlight, and driving from the hood to the nice part of the neighborhood.
Yep, and Scott is not so keen on playing that game. Yes.
So he went on extreme sports. Scott can ride dirty with Clayton English.
Yeah, apparently, but not so dirty into zombie territory as he segues into talking about a category that you're probably very familiar with, Rob, very topical for this week. He's talking all about the zombie shows that film in Atlanta.
All right, are there more than one zombie shows that films in Atlanta? Like, besides The Walking Dead, are there other zombie things that film in Atlanta?
Well, I wonder what zombie movie is filmed in Atlanta. You know, did like Dawn of the Dead film there? 28 Days. Well, I think 28 Days Later was London. But like, were there any? I wonder if there were any other zombie. Maybe Zombieland took place in Atlanta. I'll have to do my research there.
I don't think it took place in Atlanta. I feel like they were on the road for the most part. But who knows? Maybe there's a big zombie industry down in Atlanta. Of course, The Walking Dead films there. I don't think Fear the Walking Dead films there.
No, that's in LA though, right?
Yeah. So, yada, 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 zombie stuff takes place in Atlanta, but he feels like it doesn't really capture what's going on in Atlanta. They have British people playing rednecks.
Yeah, which, again, I'm wondering, actually, in some sort of a meta perspective, was NBC, was his original bit specifically mentioning The Walking Dead, but NBC told them to not say that to risk any sort of, I don't know, copyright infringement?
I can't imagine that you could make a joke about The Walking Dead and say the character's name.
Maybe they didn't want to like hype up their competition though by name dropping the show itself.
Well, that'll slow down The Walking Dead because
yeah,
the
Walking
ratings,
Dead's going to take a huge hit now.
They just would have been through the roof if Clayton English would have actually mentioned The Walking Dead by name. People were like, wait, hold on, this is a zombie show on TV?
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe it's going to sort of work inversely where people will be like, wait a minute, I want to find out more about this zombie show. But he didn't say the name, so now I'm even more interested. Now I need to check it out when I watch it Sundays in October.
Yeah, I was just going to be doing extreme sports all day on Sunday, but now I'm going to watch The Walking Dead.
I'm going to call my friends Scott R. and Scott T., and we're going to sit down and watch The Walking Dead.
Yeah. He also talks about how there's no gay people on The Walking Dead, and to this point, I think that's fair.
But... to his other point, weren't there people, quote unquote, from the hood in The Walking Dead? Wasn't there a character named like T-Bone or T-Dog?
Yes. Yes, there was.
I watched the first season and a half of Walking Dead. I remember him.
Yeah. So that's true. But I guess he felt like they were not hood enough.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess if Clayton English is able to make his way onto the show in some sort of new role, I think we'll know that AMC watched his set and took his writing advice.
Yeah. And they also felt like that he wants to see somebody selling drugs to zombies thinking that they're crackheads.
That'd be fun.
Good joke. It's a good joke. So yeah. What did you think about Clayton English?
I thought overall he was pretty good. It was tough for him to improve upon last week, but I think he's one of those people that like did... well enough to probably stay on relatively the same level as he did last week. I thought the first half of the jokes, maybe it's just because I'm not a big Walking Dead watcher, but I thought the first half of his set was stronger than the second. But I mean, he's one of the people that I thought definitely deserved to get through because even his weaker stuff, he was very polished on.
Yeah. Just to go back to quoting from Unreal, which I did in the first episode of Last Comic Standing, that they said on that show, you got to always start with a wifey. You need to have somebody who is going to, you could see as your winner when you start off. And I don't remember who the guy was that Norm said that was the best 3 minutes of stand-up comedy I've seen in 5 years.
Ryan Miller, I believe his
name
was.
Hopefully for Ryan, he's in part two of
Connor. Yeah. Sorry.
Hopefully he's in part two of the semifinals and didn't just get like montaged through here. But you want to have somebody that's like, wow, this guy could win the competition at the start of the semifinals.
Yeah, and I think Clayton definitely has a shot. I think I said this last week, but definitely a better shot than Carlos Miller.
Yeah. Roseanne said, I've got one word. Star. Star.
I love it, Roseanne. She was a little bit of a firecracker in this episode. I actually feel like she was a lot more volatile than Norm was in terms of some of her opinions. Norm kind of went to sleep a little bit this episode.
Yeah. I got a little bit of a hot take. Roseanne's blonde hair, I like it.
I like it with the white power suit personally, because that just makes her glow like her own star.
Yeah, I think she's pulling it off.
Yeah, I would say so.
I was down on Roseanne in season one of the Roseanne era, but I feel like I'm enjoying her in season two of the Roseanne era.
I honestly feel like, I feel like this season, depending on how it's structured, I think this season in general is stronger than the last one. But I feel like the judges are, as much as we make fun of Norm MacDonald, I feel like the judges are infinitely stronger than last season, where it was, you know, Keenan would occasionally say something useful, but it was Russell Peters and Roseanne just kind of spouting off nonsense.
No, I thought that Russell Peters was fine last year. I just feel like that maybe Keenan and Roseanne, having gone through this rodeo one time before, and the production also having gone through it one time before, I think that Jeselnik also is doing more than our great friend JB Smoove was doing. I just think that overall the whole thing is more polished this year.
I completely agree with that. Production as well. I just feel like even though we still don't know how the rest of the competition is going to run, I feel like the production itself on the show, I mean, you talked about it here at the top of the podcast, I feel like it's just more polished, and maybe it's because we're more used to the way it flows, but I think everything's just flowing a lot more smoothly this year.
Keenan says, you took him on a ride, he enjoyed it, and Norm said that Clayton English reminds him of Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison, because as Norm says, I feel like Tracy is much more into being this character, sort of like who Tracy Jordan was on 30 Rock, of this sort of like loud buffoonish man, which I don't think Clayton English is. So I don't necessarily agree with his statement that he's playing a character. But I think it's also weird that Norm calls it the set to beat when it was the very first set in the entire show. Like, that's pretty much a statement that doesn't need to be made.
Yeah. I think that seemed like a little bit of a stretch for me, but okay. We understand where Norm is coming from. It's a compliment. Let's talk about Taylor Tomlinson, who was all over the commercials for this show, and somebody who you would have been really surprised if she didn't get through.
Yeah. So just to, you know, in case we want to remind people, since, you know, some of these people appeared over a month ago, Taylor Tomlinson was from the first half of the first episode. She is the church comic that we got to riff on for a little bit. But she is, I'm assuming some of this material was not meant for the pulpit that she did in the semifinals.
Yeah, I forgot she was church comic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she sort of segued from the church comic into more of the community college dropout point of view. Like, I feel like the church comic thing barely gets a mention now, aside from that one thing in her video package.
She talked about how her ex is building orphanages in Africa.
I didn't know she was dating Frankie Grande.
Yes. Mike, did you watch Frankie Grande's new show on Oxygen this week?
I did not, and I think that was part of the problem, right?
Yeah, I heard not great ratings for the Frankie Grande solo project.
To be fair, when you call it like worst blank ever, a lot of people tend to probably not want to watch something called that.
I think that's a little bit like leading with your chin, where you just make it way too easy for reviewers to be able to write something that's really catty about your show, where if you called your show like, this show sucks, and then the reviewer is just like, it sure does.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, you don't ideally want to do that. But
yeah.
That being said, let's talk about Taylor Tomlinson. She dodged a bullet with the boyfriend who was building the orphanages in Africa. Mike, would you date somebody who was so concerned with their charity projects?
That's a good question, because you have to wonder how much time will be dedicated to the home life when someone's so concentrated on other people. So, I mean, I would love to, you know, obviously date someone who is very charitable and a nice person overall, but you always have to wonder, like, okay, let's talk about your work-life balance here.
Yeah. No, I think that would be very interesting to date somebody who is a nice person. No, I'm kidding. But in terms of the orphanage, yeah, I think I went, if my wife was just like really involved with all sorts of like humanitarian efforts, I'm probably such a horrible person that'd be like, but what about me?
Yeah. So you, I mean, if your wife was like Claire Underwood circa season one, you would be more like, well, I don't care about water.
You mean just like hooking up with the photographer?
Well, not that. Oh. I'd say like episode one of season one.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it's very difficult to be in a relationship with somebody who's that involved with doing great things, because you don't want to be a jerk and say, but yeah, but what about me? Don't you have any time for me? But also, yeah,
you're gonna feel horrible about yourself too, because you're gonna be like, oh yeah, honey, what did you do today? Oh yeah, I went to the orphanage and I, you know, sent a bunch of kids Christmas gifts. Like, oh great, well, you know, I just finished binging Rick and Morty on Hulu, so you know,
yeah.
This is what I did today.
How's that music from Rick and Morty?
Ryan Elder is a fantastic job. I actually just finished binging Rick and Morty in preparations for the new episode. So I've been loving it so far. It is a weird show, but in a great way.
She also talks about how that guy wanted eight kids. She says eight kids aren't walking out of this.
I mean, her set was very well put together, but it was mostly about like, well, this is me, which I feel like is very good for her at this early, in these early rounds.
And then she also talked about how she wants to be a very important milestone in any guy's life. And she says that all women want this. Sure, they want to be the woman who gets you to stop drinking, but if they can't be that, they want to be the woman who gets you to start drinking.
Yeah, she wants to be A1, not the one.
Yes. And also, she says that she wants to be the art school rejection that turns you into Hitler.
Oh, man. And you could see, I wish there was a feed on Wanda Sykes' face just to see her brows furrow when that joke is thrown out.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that joke really landed, but I know the judges were very high on her.
I did feel like it came a little out of nowhere, and I do wonder, you know, if we had Taylor Tomlinson uncensored when she wasn't on NBC at 10 o'clock, if her material skews more towards that type of darker, probably more offensive type of humor. But yeah, she sort of peppered in a little bit here. I would not go so far as to call it an atom bomb, as Norm mentioned, but I thought it was fine. It was just a little bit of a jump instead of just a natural build to a climax.
Yeah. I was a little bit like, remind me, why did you want to turn a random guy into Hitler? Why? Okay, sure. But yeah, she's really high on the Hitler jokes.
Yeah, so I wonder, you know, I can only imagine what the sitcom she'll get if she wins.
So, yeah. Let's talk about what the judges had to say about her. Roseanne can't believe that she's only 21 years old. She has unbelievable experience.
Yeah, I mean, do you agree? I mean, I know 21 is... Nowadays, I feel like a lot of people are starting out around that age, but I would say she's extremely polished for someone that young.
Yes, she's polished, and she doesn't look super young. And I don't mean that as an insult or anything like that, because I don't think it's insulting to say, oh, she looks like she's in her mid-20s as opposed to somebody who looks 21. But if she looked like a kid up there, I don't think you could take her seriously.
Yeah, you know, if like Joe Mackey, for example, looked like he was like 19, and it took a while for people to take him seriously, so... I agree. Taylor doesn't, she looks maybe like 2 or 3 years older, but I think that helps. And her, I mean, not to speak too much about her voice, but I feel like her voice is also in a lower tone and it's more like grounded, as opposed to like, if she came out with the voice of like Heather from Big Brother Canada 2, I feel like it would be a much tougher
right.
sell.
Like, you could believe she's 30.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's a good thing. I think that works in her favor, because if somebody came out and was like, you know, just like this 21-year-old woman, and she's talking about like life experience, like, what do you know about anything?
Yeah,
21-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, it's also good that like she's making it more about her, and it's less about her talking about the world, because if she did do that, I feel like then the judges could kind of strike back at her and say, well, you're only 21. I feel like that's a big Norm thing that he would do, is like, well, you're only 21 years old, you need to level a little bit before you do stuff like that. But because her set's all about like this is who I am and how I relate to the world, she can avoid that trap.
Keenan says, you have a natural gift. And Norm says about her, you're so literate.
Yeah, that is the weirdest way to describe, like, you write good jokes.
You're so literate. These jokes got stronger. And the last one was an atom bomb.
Oh, boy. I don't know if that was meant to be a World War II themed pun, but it ended up being one.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but there you go. I felt like that was odd. It was an odd choice of words from Norm.
Speaking of Norm, I actually glossed over this. With Clayton English, I know we wondered last week, if you recall, Norm said in his set, like, well, I didn't like it. And we were wondering whether he was being facetious or not. But from what we're to assume in the earlier package with Wanda Sykes, Norm really didn't like it. Which, again, is just a weird, unexplained, unsolved mystery. But maybe, you know, he's come around on him. So I guess that's sort of in the past.
Speaking of Norm Macdonald and weird, unsolved mysteries, Mike, did you follow the KFC drama this week?
Yes. Norm Macdonald. This is really the year of Norm Macdonald. Yeah. If last year was the year of Gilbert Gottfried, this is the year of Macdonald.
And we touched on this briefly on the Spice Hour this week. But Daryl Hammond has been acting as Colonel Sanders in KFC commercials. And now it looks like Daryl Hammond is out. And now here's Norm Macdonald as the Colonel Sanders.
Well, first of all, this whole Colonel thing is creepy to me. It reminds me of when they, in some of the Orville Redenbacher commercials, I don't know if you saw this, but like a few years ago, they tried to like do a CGI version of Orville Redenbacher, which was extremely creepy. And even though this is a live actor, I feel like it sort of has produced the same effect. But the Daryl Hammond Colonel Sanders, I was pretty creeped out by. I haven't seen the commercial with Norm Macdonald yet, but I'm assuming he does a little bit better than Daryl Hammond does.
I mean, Daryl Hammond is a master impressionist, and Norm Macdonald, with all due respect, impressions has never really been his strong suit.
No, except for Burt Reynolds.
I mean, it is Burt Reynolds' impression is basically like Norm Macdonald chewing gum.
Yeah, with a mustache.
With a mustache. It's not really a really quick voice. Even Bob Dole is the same exact voice as, yeah, as Burt Reynolds, but he's holding a pencil.
And he's talking to the third person.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Here is Norm Macdonald. It's like Norm Macdonald, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear that, oh, Norm Macdonald is really struggling with back taxes or something like that. This seems like he's taken on a lot of jobs lately.
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked Norm Macdonald, told Macdonald a year ago, like, hey, not only are you going to make up with the network that fired you from SNL, but you're going to be a judge on one of its reality shows, and you're also going to be starring in national fast food commercials as a mascot, I think he would have totally slapped you right there where you stood. But like, the fact is, he has become like, you know, he's come back into his own here. It's the Normasance.
It's just really weird because he's not like an ironic Colonel Sanders. He is Colonel Sanders and he's playing it straight as Colonel Sanders. Like, you would expect, like, oh, KFC is doing commercials with Norm Macdonald as Colonel Sanders. You feel like, oh, that's probably going to be really funny. Hey, I'm Colonel Sanders. Eat my chicken. And he's really just playing it in character as if he's really going for Colonel Sanders.
Are you saying that KFC, the company that produced the Polaroid camera inside a bucket of chicken, does not know how to be ironic?
Yeah. It's just weird that you're getting SNL people to play this character, but it's not a funny character.
Yeah, it's weird. Between them and like Hans and Franz appearing on the State Farm commercials, I feel like SNL alum are just, this is really their year.
But at least the Hans and Franz idea, and we're really getting away from the beaten path in terms of Last Comic Standing. But you have something that's not fun, as in State Farm Insurance, with all due respect to State Farm Insurance, that, okay, well, let's sort of trade on the goodwill earned by these beloved SNL characters and have them as our pitch people. Okay, that's great. But now you have Norm Macdonald, who, you know, sure, people love Norm Macdonald, but you're not having him do anything funny.
Yeah, that's true. To be fair, the Daryl Hammond stuff wasn't really funny.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that they're doing these commercials and they're having SNL people play Colonel Sanders, but they're not being funny. They're not doing like a funny idea with Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, KFC, from what I remember, doesn't usually do purposely funny commercials. Like, they're the ones that thought the hashtag I ate the bones was an actual, like, like an actual social media campaign. So I think the jury is out on whether on what KFC actually wants to use them for. But I agree. I hope they actually use him for something, because if Norm MacDonald's all he's going to do is just sort of stand around and just talk about how good their chicken is, they could have picked, Keith Olbermann.
Keith Olbermann. Wow.
I think it could work. Yes, he has sort of like salt and peppery hair.
Yes. Just like the original recipe of the chicken has salt and pepper.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So I think it would, you know, and if smart people were writing it, they could totally turn into like, you know, KFCBC. That's the network that Colonel Sanders is the anchor on.
And it would be sort of like an outraged, indignant Colonel Sanders. Yeah. Like, how dare you, Ronald McDonald, sir? How dare you make chicken and call it some sort of fried chicken? How dare you?
And then Norm MacDonald could play Ronald McDonald, but sort of as Norm MacDonald. And that would be the humor.
Colonel, with all due respect, where do you get off, sir?
Okay. Oh, man, this is great. Let's write this down.
All right. What did you think of this segment that they ended up shoehorning into the episode? The top five exit fails, Mike.
So more or less of a useless segment than James's pranks on BD-17.
Top five exit fails did not work for me. If you're going to do it, do them all in a row. Don't give me one exit fail, because some of them were just not that impressive.
They were all weren't impressive. It was just somebody walked the wrong way or opened a locked door. Like that was the entire joke. And I agree. I don't know why they spaced it out. It wasn't like anyone was watching. Like, well, we can't turn the TV off now. I have to find out who is the number one exit fail.
Yeah. And you felt like number one was going to be so good that you were going to say, okay, well, now I understand why they did the list of five. But I think the top five exit fails was a fail.
Yeah, I completely agree, which means next week is going to be the top five fails of Last Comic Standing list.
Yeah. I mean, if you gave us like the top five things that nobody knows what Norm is talking about, like I'm in on that. But top five exit fails, I think that was a stretch.
Well, and that's usually reserved for like clip shows. I remember the clip show last year that they did over 4th of July, I think was like the top 20 jokes. And I think they did that in the finale as well, just to pad time.
Is my favorite Thai dish also.
Oh, great. I was going to throw in an international survivor joke, but I couldn't remember what you guys had talked about. I think that like there's no reason. You're already jam packed as it is with 20 comics. There's no reason to throw this in here.
Here's our first montage, and we end up with seeing a couple people. We had Mehran.
Mm-hmm. So Mehran was from the first episode as well. He was the Iranian gay guy, and he's sort of in our third level of editing here, where he got a couple jokes in. Level three. He was level three, and he got like a comment from the judges, but that was it.
Yeah. He ended up doing a joke, which I think is a tough joke to pull off. Talking about he went to a breast cancer fundraiser and they had like pink ribbons and pink balloons, and his joke was like, oh, happy birthday, breast cancer. And so he says that he's not allowed to go there anymore. Now he just sends a check. They said he was fearless and they said he was charming, but I think that was a nice way of saying you're not getting through.
Yeah, and I think it's a good sign of saying, well, the rest of your set might not have worked. And again, if that's your strongest joke, I think that speaks miles as to how the rest
of
your set went.
I'm not positive that joke worked.
Yeah, exactly. So if that's questionable, if your set is questionable at best, that is not a good sign.
We saw Alicia Cooper, and
yeah, that was $700 weave woman.
Oh, okay, good. Thanks for tying it together, because I did not remember that's who it was. She talked about how she can't wait for the president to be white again, because she's arguing with Tea Party people on Facebook. She's acting like Obama is her uncle. I thought that was kind of a funny take.
Yeah, I thought it was funny to like make it all about, well, the reason why I don't want Obama to be president anymore is because I feel I have to be personally brought into arguments. I didn't know Tea Party people still argued on social media. I thought they died out around like the early 2010s.
It's still going.
Still good. Maybe I just choose to ignore it.
That's still going. Then you have Brad Local, who has a very high opinion of himself.
Yes, he was from the second to last episode. He was a montage person as well. He is the one who his mom told him to figure out whether his neighbor's dogs were gay.
Yeah.
And he talks about had the beauty regimen as a gay man, and how in a group of straight men, he's a catch, but in a group of gay men, he's considered precious.
You know what they say, once a montage person, always a montage person.
it's hard to break the mold, you know? I feel like there really is a glass ceiling with montage people.
Yeah. Once you go montage, you never go back, unfortunately, yeah, exactly. For Brad Local. And he talks about, yeah, that if he was a straight person, he would be a catch. Again, think maybe a little high on himself, Brad Local.
Well, I mean, some people go for the bald
the Heisenberg look.
Well, I would say it's more like the old school weightlifter looks of the guys in like those striped jumpsuits.
Yeah, maybe our female listeners could tell us if Brad Local is saying like, boy, too bad he's not playing for our team.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you put the three of us in a lineup, we'll see how many people pick him.
Whoa. Well, now we're sounding too high on ourselves.
That's true.
So one last thing on Brad Local. Then Norm said, hey, this looks like a badass wedding cake.
Yeah, with him and Jezelnik.
I didn't get what Norm is talking about at all there.
I don't either. I wonder how much on the cutting room floor is him just rambling and nobody really understanding what he's talking about, and whether they just let him ramble just to sort of satiate him. But I didn't really understand it either.
It just didn't make any sense. I don't know what made Norm think that these two people look like they'd be at the top of the wedding cake. I mean, it's not like Brad was wearing a white gown or even a white outfit that you would pair with Jeselnik, who was in a suit, or it's not like he had a matching suit to Jeselnik. Like, I just didn't know what Norm was seeing that said this looks like a pair that should be on a wedding cake.
Well, remember that the previous set we saw, he just called someone literate. So I think that speaks to the quality of his judging this episode.
I didn't get it. I can't get in Norm's head. We had Kevin Bozeman, who talks about Santa Claus. It doesn't exist. I thought this was kind of a funny take about how you need to tell your kid that Santa Claus isn't real when you can't afford their Christmas list.
Yeah, he was a montage guy as well from the second, from the third hour, second episode. He was the guy who was talking about how there was the 9/11 security fee on the plane. So he definitely is one of those people that, like, from the jokes we see, he's pretty funny. But overall, double montage is the death sentence.
We had Sammy Obaid, who we saw a little bit of early on in the show. He was being like super neurotic and talking about how he has a formula of what jokes are going to work. And then he ended up doing his set. He talks about how he got a flat tire next to a homeless person, that the homeless person was saying spare change. He was saying change spare.
Yeah, who would have known Sammy Obaid is an Opposite Worlds fan, Rob? He referenced it.
Yes. And he talks about how he's writing his will. He's going to leave everything to his grandma just in case that she is going to write her will at the same time. So a very heady set from Sammy Obaid.
Well, let's remember, this guy was kind of a hot mess last time we saw him. He was the one that like started off with the math jokes, then made that one joke about the having the Israeli roommate that Roseanne thought was fantastic political commentary, and then he ended with like all those puns on Indian names. So then we even saw a little bit of him this episode before him, where he's like, I've written down my jokes and calculated which judge will like which joke, and then I ran an equation to figure out which jokes are going to maximize the most potential. And like, that is not a way to approach comedy whatsoever. There are no saber metrics of comedy.
Yeah, no money ball for Last Comic Standing.
Yeah, no money ball for him either, as he just lost out on his shot on $250,000.
Even though Norm liked his wordplay, he's out. All right, and now let's go back to Andy Erickson, who again was somebody who really got a fair amount of screen time in terms of she was a package person the first time around. We really got to see her. The judges really loved her the first time around, even though Roseanne wanted to slap her for her voice. And then here's Andy Erickson, and she did great and got really a lot of praise from the judges.
So this is the one person that I would say I'm not as high
You're
on as the judges.
You're out on Andy Erickson?
I'm not out on Andy Erickson as much as I'm like halfway through the door on Andy Erickson. And
hold on, Mike, that Colonel Sanders Oberman wants to say, how dare you, Mike Bloom? Where do you get off, sir?
Oh, this just in. The Burger King is coming in from the other line, recording live from Washington.
Yes.
I mean, granted, this is like, you know, I felt the same way about Joe Mackey last year early on, that I was like, I don't get this guy. And then I absolutely fell in love with him and he became my front runner. But I don't know. I mean, I love her delivery. It's so quirky, but the material itself is just so fluid. You know, I just feel like, you know, if you wrote her jokes down and gave them to somebody else to read, they would not be nearly as funny. And maybe that's just a sign of her delivery, yeah. Mike, but it means that her right.
Do you remember who won the show last year?
Rodman.
It wasn't that the same exact critique that we had about Rodman?
That's true. Speaking of which, actually, breaking news are happening now. Did you hear the Rodman news this week?
That the NBC sitcom pilot is a go?
Exactly. Pigs are flying. Hell has finally frozen over. The Rodman TV product, backed by Wanda Sykes, is finally coming to NBC.
And it's not going to be the show where he's living with Audrey from Big Brother 17?
It might end up being that because, and I'll read this from Deadline, it revolves around a successful comedian who uproots his wife and daughter from L.A. to his hometown of Villa Rica, Georgia, to care for his strong-willed mother because, ironically, the stand-up comic is more stable and responsible than his self-important brother and materialistic sister.
Okay. It'd be fun.
I believe that's also the plot to Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Oh, look, NBC is trying some stuff right now. I mean, they have, is it the David Alan Greer show that they're doing?
Yeah, the Charlestons, or I forget the name of it, something like that, where he's basically playing like an Archie Bunker type.
Yeah, and actually, I believe the joke that they kept showing in the preview was they were talking about somebody who was a transgender person.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that joke.
Yeah, that was a little, not really a politically correct show that David Alan Greer is going to be on.
Yeah, I think that they need the laugh track for that one, or maybe they'll need the boo track.
Yeah, but it's just interesting. Say, okay, maybe that's where NBC is going.
That's true. If they want to get into, you know, Fox, I feel like for a while was known for their more racy material. But if NBC wants to go that route, I mean, they basically took an atom bomb to their own comedy lineup. So if they want to rebuild from scratch, they might as well start with an interesting POV.
Was that what happened on NBC comedy shows, that one of their last jokes was an atom bomb? And they said, boy, now we have to rebuild everything.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, all right, well, we'll get Rodman in here. We'll get David Alan Greer. I think they still kept Undateable in there for some reason.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go back to Andy Erickson, and maybe she's going to be the final piece of this NBC new comedy lineup. She says that laughter is the best medicine, but crying is the generic brand. She ends up going into meow, meow, I'm a cat. Seems like that was just like her nervous go-to thing, but it really kills. Yeah.
Who knows? I wonder if her and Enzo are related.
She talks about how she saw a one-armed guy in the casino. The thing about her and why I think she has an unfair advantage is that everything she says, the audience laughs at the setup. Where other people, you have to wait for there to be a punchline. She gets people to laugh at the setup.
And I feel like it's just because her setups are delivered so interestingly that like it makes people laugh, because she has this like very excited little girl the way of saying things, and I feel like that makes people laugh, because the way you're used to in comedy is for the setup to be serious and the punchline to be funny. So for her to sort of invert those expectations works for her.
So I feel like I could see why another comedian would be frustrated with her, because her jokes are, well, they're clever, are probably not hilarious. They're a little bit like, you know, joke book jokes, if you were going to really be fair about them. But she gets a laugh on every line she says, whereas a mortal comedian has to give a, you know, setup, punchline. And it's just much more efficient what she's able to do. So who's to say who's better?
Yeah, and I mean, that Noah's Ark joke should not have been able to fly whatsoever, because it is a very remedial joke. But because she was able to deliver it, everyone absolutely ate it up, including the judges. So I do agree, like, she does have sort of an unfair advantage in terms of, like, she can basically say anything and it will get laughs. But I wonder if that's sort of going to work against her later on, where the judges will say, like, okay, we get your, which is what kind of happened with Joe Mackey a little bit, was like, okay, we get your delivering now. Now we need to focus on your jokes themselves.
That's true. But I feel like she's just going to kill no matter what audience she plays in front of.
Yeah, that could be true. Well, I think either way, I mean, she's a small comedian from like Michigan, I think it was. So even if she's in the top 10 now, I guarantee she'll start like playing the circuits and will definitely make a name for herself. I personally just don't see her winning.
But all of these other comedians, like, take a joke that she ended up closing with, where she says, you know, people always ask me, where do you get your drugs? And her second line is, I find them. Every other comedian that we saw tonight would not have gotten a big laugh on the first line, where she's able to say, like, people are always asking me, where do you get your drugs? And she's, and the way that she just is, her energy makes you really crack up at the first line of the joke, where she gets two jokes of mileage out of just one joke.
Well, considering she is probably the only comic I've seen that was able to turn losing her track of thought in the middle of a set into something funny that the judges liked.
Yeah.
And I guess that's maybe a lesson to all of us that if you're in a meeting and you ever lose your train of thought, just do a cat impression and you'll get everyone back on your side.
And I don't know to what degree the producers are involved in trying to find somebody who could star in a show, but I feel like you could envision a show around Andy Erickson.
I would, but I don't know if I would want to watch it.
Yeah. Although, you know what? I have to, and just to table that a little bit, or to couch that, whatever piece of furniture you want to do that to, I feel like she's a great supporting character. I'm not sure
Absolutely.
You could build a show around her. You know, we heard with Norm MacDonald when Brian Kellen went up, he said, you know, you could be like a Kramer, you could walk onto a sitcom today. You could put her on a sitcom instantly and the show would be funnier. Can you build a show around her? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I could totally see her as one of those supporting characters on one of those like Chuck Lorre shows, like Two Broke Girls or Mom, where she's like one of the quirky side characters, and I think that totally works for her.
Right.
But I don't think structuring a show around her is going to work whatsoever. Like you look at like New Girl, for example, where I don't know if you saw the early stages of New Girl, but like season one, the Zooey Deschanel character was like out of this world cuckoo bananas, and people were not a huge fan of it. And so when they sort of reined her back and made her normal, more of a normal person, people liked the show more.
Okay. So then we got to what the judges had to say, where Keenan talks about how some comedians try to be characters. You are a character. And then Norm had a funny interjection. He's like, yeah, you're a cat.
Just let Uncle Norm, just let him ramble on. It's okay.
Yeah, but you're awesome. Roseanne said, I loved you. You're a fantastic wordsmith. The darker you get, the sweeter you are. And
I don't know how dark that material was, though.
She's like, she talked about a guy with one arm.
Yeah, oh man, those amputee jokes, man. That's some dark material.
And then Norm talked about how your material has to be strong, but it was strong. He talks about Emo Phillips, and you're both single. And she said that, well, she has an engagement ring.
Yeah, we met her fiance in the video package. I guess Jeselnik just wasn't paying attention for some reason. But that would be a weird couple.
And not to get too far down the path of this non sequitur, but I actually did directed a video that I worked with Emo Phillips's girlfriend. So he was not single either.
Oh, okay. Was this for the Scorned bonus footage?
No, it was something from my life of non-reality TV doing stuff. This was when I was working on making a web series.
How did you know she was his girlfriend? Did he visit the set, or was she one of those girlfriends that like announced it to everyone she saw?
We met at his house.
Oh, okay. What's his house like?
Again, we're going too far down this non sequitur of that he was not a single person at the time that I met him like 4 years ago.
Okay, all right. We'll save the house tour of Emo Phillips for a later day.
For another day, okay. We did another exit fail. Sammy obeyed. He walked off too slowly. Okay.
Yeah, he won't stop saying goodbye, basically. He just keeps waving to the crowd.
All right. Then let's check in with Sheng Wang.
The comeback kid.
The comeback kid. And he talks about how his friend said that, what sort of workout was his friend trying to get him to do?
So he talks about how he takes group exercise classes at the gym, which he does with a lot of women. So he starts off with a joke that like, well, I'm not really getting more muscular, but I can probably recognize a Pink song. And then his cousin thinks working out with girls is gay. And so he points out that his cousin prefers working in a penis rich environment.
Classic joke.
Apparently, according to Roseanne, it's a classic right up there with Why the Chicken Crossed the
Instant
Road.
Classic.
Instant classic.
Penis rich environment.
I can't wait for the shirts that say that.
Yeah. And then he talks about how people make fun of him for wearing a helmet, and he talks trash about safety. Look at that heart nerd. And then I thought then his strongest material was about where he brought a woman home and his roommate was like, all right, she's okay, but you can do better. And he said, I could do better, but better ain't trying to do me.
And then he goes on, well, better's out there somewhere trying to do best. Don't worry about it. I'm just going to do okay.
Yeah.
Which I actually personally think is the best joke I've heard thus far this season.
It was very good. Norm said it was a final joke with instant classic.
I think that's much more of an instant classic than Penis Rich Environment. And I think, from what I remember, we were a little lukewarm on Sheng Wang the first time. I think, sort of like Wanda pointed out when in the early stages of this episode, that he does a lot of setup for only a tiny punchline, but he took her note and sort of reeled that back in, and I think it really worked for him, because now he was able to tell, like, three different jokes instead of like the one and a half he could last time.
Yeah. And so Keenan said about him that he likes the Asian intelligence with the Southern swag. And we know from Big Brother 17, that is a big hit on summertime 2015 reality TV.
Does that mean Sheng Wang is going to get the coup d'etat? So if he gets sent to the elimination round, he gets to send someone else in his place?
Perhaps. Or maybe it just means that Sheng Wang is going to sneak up on people if he gets into the house. Oh, there is no house. If he gets into the hotel.
If he'll sneak up on people in the hotel. And the cat ladies that watch Last Comic Standing are going to love him. I'm not talking about Andy Erickson.
Yeah. Roseanne says, you're a great writer and every one of your jokes is a classic. And then, see, Norm was a little down on Sheng Wang. He talked about how, like, the final joke was an instant classic, but he felt like he made some sort of, like, baseball analogy. He thought it rolled foul.
Yeah, like, as in, like, it started, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong on this terminology, that, like, as if he hit the ball and it started off fair, but then it verged into foul territory.
I believe
that's
where we're going with this, yes.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if I agree with him, because in general, I thought this set was stronger than his previous one was, but I think the whole bike helmet thing wasn't necessary, and maybe that's what Norm was referring to.
Yeah. So, Sheng Wang gets through, probably, for me, I feel like of the five people that got through, I think I was probably most on the fence with Sheng Wang. I'm not anti-Sheng Wang. I just thought that, you know, he had the one, you know, sort of really strong set, but I felt like the stuff about the, you know, working out with girls and the helmet trash talk, I felt like that was just kind of okay.
Yeah, I mean, he defied my expectations, so I was happy to see him go through. But I do wonder, once we get to the top 10, will he be overshadowed by these other comics?
All right, let's talk about Miss Pat, who's back.
Yes, and she is a Sykes fiend.
Yes, she loves Wanda Sykes. She wants to hug Wanda Sykes. She wants to kiss Wanda Sykes.
Did she change her hair, too, from the last time? Because, granted, we saw her like a month ago. I can't remember what her hair was the last time we saw her.
Yeah, I think that Miss Pat was a lot stronger tonight than when we saw her the first time around. Because wasn't she talking about, like, just, like, a lot of stuff about the different heartache going on in her life?
Yeah, so Miss Pat the last time, she was once again from the first episode. That was when she talked about, like, I got shot two times, got hit by a dump truck. I was a small business owner, when she was talking about, like, being a drug dealer.
And she was a montage person, right?
No, she actually had a video package, because okay. She was, she, like, takes her daughter to her clubs to take notes, because she has, like, four kids. But I remember when she came on the first time, we both said, like, wow, her life is really interesting. But I wonder if her material is just going to keep being about her life, how long before she exhausts her material. And I really have to commend Miss Pat for coming in and doing something completely different. I was a little saddened to see her not go through.
Yeah, I thought that Miss Pat was going to get through. I was a little surprised when it was Sheng Wang and not Miss Pat.
Especially since she got the Wanda package. I think she was the only person who got the sit down with Wanda Sykes that did not make it through.
Yeah. And so she learned from Wanda. Wanda Sykes gave her some good notes, have cut out a lot of the setup. And again, that's such a great note with comedy. I've talked about this before, but I just feel like there's a ticking clock. How fast can you get that first laugh on the scoreboard?
Yeah, especially since you're only given like 3 to 5 minutes. I feel like usually tracks on like a comic CD are like 5 to 7 minutes, where you're able to like tell your stories and get much more into the details and pause for laughs. But I feel like with Last Comic Standing, it's much more of like operating a high speed monorail, and that you're just like, okay, gotta go, 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 get through these jokes. So sort of like with Sheng Wang, because she got rid of a lot of her setup, she was able to squeeze a lot more jokes into that time period.
But I think that really speaks to like the strength of an Andy Erickson, where she could just walk out and say, how are you guys doing tonight? And like, it would get like a big laugh.
That's true as well. And it'd be interesting to see what an Andy Erickson comedy special would be like. I do wonder if, like, she would do something like, I don't know if you ever saw Kristen Schaal do stand-up, but hers was not very stand-up based, but more like skits or like doing characters. So it'd be interesting to see what an Andy Erickson comedy special would be like.
Okay. And so Miss Pat ends up talking about the racism, very topical racism on the Dukes of Hazzard. And she says, yeah, of course there's racism. They're racing away from Boss Hogg.
Yeah, that might be one of those like joke book jokes. That's a simple wordplay that
I
does like not fit
it. I thought it was cute. And then also she talks about how she likes it when rich white people say racially ignorant things, because when Paula Deen said the N-word, before she was paying $100 for her pots, then she paid $20.
I loved this bit that she went on. The stuff in the middle about how, like, she goes on to talk about the only time she sees white people on TV was on The Young and the Restless and The Price is Right. It was another fine joke, but I feel like once she dug into this Paula Deen and Duck Dynasty stuff, I feel like she really hit her stride.
Now, Mike, I remember going to Target during this Paula Deen scandal and remember seeing all of the Paula Deen cookware marked way down. I was like, wow, this is a good deal, but it's a totally different look, I think, when you are a white guy like me stocking up on the Paula Deen cookware that's marked down, because then I feel like you get to the checkout and it's almost like, you know what? I'm standing by Paula Deen. It's not seen as like, okay, I'm here for the deal. It's almost like, well, Paula Deen's still okay by me.
I totally agree. It's
a different story for the white guy.
I've totally faced that before, even as a male, where I was like, I would try to cash in on similar stuff with Bill Cosby. But like, if I'm like standing in line and if I see women looking over me and I'm like brandishing Bill Cosby's merchandise, you know, what does that say about
what
me?
What Bill Cosby support? Merchandise are you buying?
I loved his old stand-up specials. So if I ever saw that, I would try to buy it. But I feel like I would just get so many judgmental looks nowadays that I would not warrant me buying anything.
So you're not just like stocking up on Jell-O pudding in the supermarket and people are giving you dirty looks?
No Malcolm Jamal Warner dolls, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know why you have to bring Malcolm Jamal Warner into this. He didn't do anything.
Well, the whole Huxtable family is now sort of fallen under this.
He's not really his dad.
I know, but I feel like I would say like a Theo Huxtable doll. I feel like I don't know if I would want to buy.
Hey, do you remember like 6 months ago when presidential nominee Donald Trump was getting mad at Keisha Knight Pulliam about why didn't she call Bill Cosby because I think he's a good guy?
Yeah. I maybe that inspired him. I'm like, you know what? I feel like. Do you need to take these celebrities seriously? And so I'm going to run for president so you can take me seriously.
Why haven't any of the other Republican nominees pulled those clips from the Celebrity Apprentice 2015 premiere? Said, Donald Trump thinks Bill Cosby is a good guy.
I'm waiting for the
smear campaign. Is this who you want as your next president?
I thought you were going to ask, like, why didn't they try to gain the support of other sitcom dads? Like, oh, Jeb Bush is backed by Alan Thicke.
Well, then they would say, well, Alan Thicke is Canadian.
Yeah,
that's not patriotic.
And his son is not the best guy in the world either.
Yeah. So I just feel like that's so how quickly things have changed. Where back in February we were talking about Donald Trump is saying, hey, Bill Cosby's a good guy, why don't you call him? And then all these months later you're talking about the person who's the front runner for the Republican side for president of the United States.
Yeah, he's gonna, as my first piece of legislation, Bill Cosby will be exonerated of all, all charges.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Going back to Miss Pat, the judges, they really liked her. You did great, Roseanne says. And Keenan says that, he was nervous when she first came out, but she did good.
Yeah, and I agree with Keenan that like once she started talking about the racism, she really not only got excited herself, but really engaged the audience. But then Norm does this sort of like good news, bad news type of judging, where he's like, well, on one hand, I hate political comedy. On the other hand, you made it personal, so it was funny.
So which is it?
Yeah, I have no idea. I guess go with the good news that's more personal, but we're finding a lot about Norm's worldviews himself. You know, he hates political comedy. He loves J.K. Rowling.
Yes, he does.
He knows a lot about the NAACP.
Yeah, he sure does. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But before we talk a little bit more about some of the critical things the judges had to say, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor. And those are our friends over at LegalZoom, Mike, because there are lots of great reasons that smart business people trust LegalZoom. Because for starters, if you want to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit, file a patent or a trademark, or get a DBA, LegalZoom provides the help that you need. Just like when we're going to be starting our fast food restaurant and hiring Keith Olbermann as our spokesperson, we'll need to talk to some people at LegalZoom to figure out all the logistics.
Yeah, we're going to have to get a lot of things cleared with the larger NBC networks just to make sure that we're not under any sort of infringement.
That's right. Because over the past decade, more than a million business owners just like you have started with LegalZoom. It's your first stop when you need advice from an attorney. Now, LegalZoom's not a law firm, so they built a network of independent attorneys in most states to provide legal advice and other useful services that will help you run your business. And hopefully, your business can be even more successful than Rodman's brother's business, who seems like it's really floundering.
Yeah, though he's self-important, so who knows? He might be too much of a workaholic to appreciate his family. We'll find out this fall.
Probably didn't go to LegalZoom.
No, definitely not. Maybe that'll be an episode.
So when you need a contract reviewed or advice on whether you should incorporate or form an LLC, whatever your legal question, start with LegalZoom. They've got complete transparency, upfront pricing, customer reviews, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. So make the smart choice for your business at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Rob at checkout to save even more. Again, that's Rob at checkout for more savings at LegalZoom.com. Legal help is here. And boy, some of these people could have used legal help or any kind of help in this montage of all the criticism. First off, what did you think of putting together a montage of all of the negative comments from the judges?
So this reminds me a lot of like the early days of American Idol when they would do those montages of really bad auditions or like Simon comments, which is applicable because it makes more sense for an audition setting. You know, these people have already made it through to the semifinals. I feel like it's a little like biting the hand that feeds them to be like, oh yeah, now all these people got crapped on.
Yeah, these really came very fast. And the comedians weren't always lower thirded here during this.
Nope.
And so it was a little hard to tell who was getting this criticism. Harrison Greenbaum, he was the guy that we were a little critical of, or at least I was, last week, where he made the jokes about fat people, and I felt like it's tough to make those jokes if you are not a fat guy, talking about like this is what it's like for me. So he was just like sort of being mean to fat people. And then also he did the stuff about Harry Potter, and Norm was really hard on him. Again, Norm hates this guy.
Yeah, well, he is. This was definitely strikes two and three simultaneously for Harrison this week, because if he's showing anything now, his bit was about, you know, the NAACP doesn't show much advancement, that they still use the term color people, but he wishes they would use the term African American so that it would just read nah. And then Norm right back to Biden saying, once again, do your research. They call it it's still the NAACP for a reason. Research it and then don't do the joke anymore. So I agree. I think Norm this guy is just lazy.
Yeah. And my line on this is always like, if you're going to be writing material that's going to be NAACP jokes, like, these better be the best jokes ever. Like, these jokes better be an atom bomb if you're going to go there. And the joke of the punchline that it just be like, nah, I don't think was really atom bomb level.
Yeah, and I would say that this sort of relates
atom
back to
talk level.
Oh, boy. That means the Tory Spelling was about to come out and make a cameo. And it sort of goes back to what you were talking about before with his fat person joke of like, this is not his point of view. This is not a territory that he's in. So it's always a little touchy for him to be making jokes about
right.
this in the first place.
It's observational comedy.
Yeah. But I would say, you know, if we're doing the MB and RC rules of Last Comic Standing, You can embellish certain things about your own personal stories to make things funnier, but you can't embellish things about other things that exist. You know, you can't lie that the NAACP can change their name or that Harry Potter, you can, or that there's a quote in Harry Potter that doesn't exist, because someone's going to call you out on that.
That's fair. Yeah, I just think for Harrison, and I don't think that he's listening to this, but I think talk about what you know more so, more than like here's some other weird stuff about the NAACP or fat people or stuff like that. Let's just like talk about what's going on in your world.
Yeah, figure out who you are and then work out from there. And then you can start sort of observing the world.
Okay. The criticism was coming fast and furious. Who else got nailed during this montage?
All right. So the first guy, I think this might have been Cyrus McQueen. I'm not sure. A lot of these people, these were the ones that were in lower thirded. So we're going to have to go by like people you remember through face memory and the judges referring to them by name. But this first guy, Keenan, says he was all over the place thematically. We see our guy Amir K from last week. Norm tells him, I guess he did a similar thing than Harrison, where I guess he made a joke about Scientology, but it was not correct or well researched, because Norm told him that if he had watched the documentary on Scientology, he could have made the jokes clearer, which I think is an unintentional pun on going clear. We saw LeVar Walker, the pharmacist from last week, and Keenan tells him, stop being a pharmacist and get out into the world, which is the second time someone told him to stop being a pharmacist.
Like, it's a good thing that guy didn't quit his job last week when Norm told him to.
I feel like this guy is just going to keep getting bullied into quitting his job by judges on national television.
Yeah. Who else?
This other guy I didn't recognize. He was a white guy in a silver shirt. I liked his shirt, but Roseanne told him that it wasn't very strong.
The shirt?
There was this guy.
That was great.
The shirt was strong. I guess maybe he was peacocking a little bit, where he was wearing the shirt to distract from his set.
He was on NBC.
That's true, and this is the home of the peacock. Christian Ramirez, who I think was from the second hour of the first episode, Norm tells him that he had to take out an Urban Dictionary for his set this time and that he didn't like it. Mia Jackson, who we saw last week, Keenan told her that she just didn't live up to expectation. And then we saw Angelo from last week, who neither one of us were very high on. He was the guy who was a montage guy that was talking about like My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. And Roseanne echoes our sentiments here when she says she didn't hear anything she hadn't heard before.
That's right. Also, wasn't Amir K in there?
Yeah, Amir K was the one that Norma was talking about Scientology with. Yeah, montage overload. And well, Amir K also had some exposure early on because he was the number 3 top 5 exit fail.
Yeah, I bet that's a tough spot for these people who are like, hey, everybody, I was on Last Comic Standing this season. Make sure you watch me tonight. And then they were just sort of like one of the montage people that just got killed.
Yeah, I think I saw Mia Jackson tweet at one point like, well, I appreciate your comments. Thanks so much, judges, for having me on. Like, it must be a bummer to really come on and be like, oh, I'm on Last Comic Standing, and then to be relegated to 15 seconds where a professional comedian tells you that your jokes didn't work.
Yeah, unfortunately. What are you going to do? So that's unfortunate for all of these montage people.
Mm-hmm. But I guess if they had to leave some more time for other people, I guess this was something. This was a montage that we had never seen before on Last Comic Standing. It'll be interesting to see if they bring it back again.
Yeah. So I'm looking at Amir K's Twitter, and he looks like he didn't even promote that the show was going to be on last night.
Because he was watching the Going Clear documentary.
Yeah, I guess so. He didn't mention anything about it. He did mention when he was going to be moving on to the semifinals.
Okay, so maybe he was in that case of like he was excited to be hopefully showed on national television once again, but once he got montage, he sort of rage quit and decided not to promote the show anymore.
Maybe he deleted the tweet that said to watch it.
Maybe it's a sort of like a Josh Trank from Fantastic Four type of thing of him disparaging the show and then deleting the tweet.
Maybe that's highly possible. So then let's get back to the traditional comedy sets. No more montage. We have now. Wait, did DC Irvin, was he part of the montage?
No, I guess you could call him, he wasn't part of this montage, but I guess he was sort of like, he was in level 3 again of like, he got two jokes right, shown, so, he got one joke shown, and then the judges had comments. Okay.
So let's get back to the more traditional setup of, here's Brian Kellen, he's the guy who was almost like a Jim Carrey, that he's like the really physical guy. He talked about how there were drunk people at a bar and he was doing that. And he talked about how then he had sex before a basketball game and talked about what that was like.
Yeah, I was like, when I was watching his set, the first like 15 seconds, I'm like, okay, maybe he's not going to do this weird rubber physical thing. And then once he started getting into the whole, you know, he lost his virginity and then had to go to a basketball game that night, and he did the whole rubber like thing, I'm like, oh, there it comes out. I mean, I was okay with him the first time he did this, but I'll admit, Rob, this set was a little exhausting for me, just watching him do all this stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell what he was going for, and then he kept talking about, did you score? And I didn't know if he was talking about the sex or the basketball game, and I don't know.
Yeah, and he, I mean, I agree with Keenan here. He came out and he started doing this sort of tongue-in-cheek stuff about, like, well, I'm a, as you can see, I'm a great lover. And I think that, like, if he wanted to play that character throughout, that's one thing, but then he immediately went back into his old self and his typical physical stuff. So it was sort of like a little disconcerting to see that happen. What did you think of the story of, like, he lost his virginity and had to go to a basketball game? Is it like, would it be similar to
a humble,
like,
brag, Mike, if we're going to be honest?
So there won't be any Rob Cesarino stand-up stuff about, like, well, I lost my virginity and then I had to do a podcast.
Yeah. It's not far off. It's not far off.
Would a similar thing have to happen? Would it be all out of whack?
Yeah. It would be sort of like, yeah. So I lost my virginity and then I had to go to my 15-year high school reunion that day. So it was a very busy day for me.
Yeah, exactly. We're just building your stand-up set right now.
But yeah, that sounds like a nice life for Brian Callen.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's able to pick up girls at the bar physically.
Yes. So
that was scary. That was frightening.
When he just did like the big pratfall in terms of just hitting his head.
I wouldn't call that a pratfall as much as I would call that a dead drop. And specifically the noise that he made. I think it was purposely the noise of the mic hitting the ground, but it sounded, it was akin to like Meg hitting her head at the veto competition.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good at that sort of stuff. I mean, even the judges agreed on that. Norman Dowd said, yeah, it's like you're Kramer, put you on a sitcom. And Roseanne says, you know, you're gifted with your physical ability. Now, Keenan says that at the beginning he was doing a voice and that voice worked against him. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, so that was what I was talking about before with like his, like, well, naturally, I'm a great lover. I don't know if it was a voice as much as like a mentality he had. But once he started getting into the basketball stuff, it completely went away. I do wonder, I mean, obviously he didn't make it through, but, you know, Norm made this comment about like, we could stick you on a sitcom any day. I sort of disagree with me here with Rob, if you want to. I sort of feel like sitcoms nowadays are much less about the physical comedy than it was during the 90s.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that comedy is not as broad as it used to be for the most part. I mean, there certainly are things. I mean, I could see him walking onto a Nickelodeon show today. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see him walking onto Dog with a Blog and being a breakout character on that show.
Yeah, he could wear like a giant bone costume
sure.
or something.
I could certainly see him working with Joey on Fuller House and also killing on that show.
Oh my God, that would make things so much more annoying. And that's saying something with Joey Gladstone.
But no, I can't really see this guy on like a, you know, mainstream like network comedy.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I feel like even up to like Everybody Loves Raymond, it was all about like the physical comedy stuff. But everyone is much more, we're like live in a snarkier comedy society nowadays where it's much more about like the writing and the way people deliver things. So like, I feel like Brian Callen is sort of stuck in the past almost with the way he's working.
Yeah, but I think it's something that comes down to like screen size, like where Brian Callen, if he was going to work in theater, he would be great at what he does.
Oh, yeah.
And then
he'd be absolutely amazing.
When we're looking at like multicam situational comedy, then like that would probably also work for him because you have so much of the wide shot. And as Tracy Morgan once said, comedy lives in the wide shot. But as you're getting more into like single cam show, you have more tighter shots and more close ups. And that stuff is just way too broad for that. And movies as well. You know, it's like the screen is so big, you know, you could see so much closer. If somebody just needs to like raise an eyebrow, it's like, oh my God, that was so dramatic. So it's really like the further away you are, the better Brian Callen is going to be in terms of looking at the action.
Yeah, if they revive Singing in the Rain, I feel like he'd be perfect for the Donald O'Connor role.
Again, I think YouTube might be a good spot for him, because if you're looking at it on your phone, the screen is much smaller. Those dramatic movements would really work for him.
So it's like, all right, Brian, we love you. The only thing is, we're going to have to put the camera back about 20 feet just to make sure you come off the best you can.
Right. Like, I think I have my notes to him, like, have you considered a career in theater or on YouTube?
You're so physical. Have you considered a career in like kabuki theater?
So he does not get through. Did you think he was? No. Did you think he was going to get through?
I thought for a second he might, just because I think the judges were, with the exception of Keenan for a little bit, were like really high on him. But they were very complimentary of a lot of people. So I could totally understand why he didn't make it through.
Okay. So then we saw the number two exit fail, which was Rob Hayes.
Yeah, walking the wrong way and then wandering back into frame and going into the other side.
And then the last comedian that we saw was Francisco Ramos, who is the fifth person to get through from this hour. And he ends up doing a bunch of stuff talking about his accent.
Yeah, he might be a little on the fence for me, too. I think the stuff about his mom was by far the strongest part of his set. And the stuff with the accent was like, fine. The stuff in the middle was probably the least strong stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he was doing stuff about how he does his accent, but then people thought he was deaf. I thought he probably should not do the deaf person voice there. I think that it was fine just to do the joke about people are mistaking him for being deaf because he is turning up his accent so much. And he's talking about how he's going to parties and trying to pick up women. But I agree, the stuff about the mom, the American mom or the white mom versus the Latina mom, very funny.
Yeah, I like guffawed out loud when he did the impression of his mom waking him up like he was being kidnapped.
Yeah,
definitely. I thought that was one of the funniest moments of the episode. But I wonder, you know, from what I remember, and he was from like the third hour, I think. When he was the tennis coach and he mispronounced focus. That was what I remember from him. So I wonder how much of his humor is going to be like, well, I have an accent, so I do things weird sometimes.
Yeah, he also did the joke in the first round about Jeopardy, and that's how people should get citizenship into the country, where you have to win a game show.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has that potential as well, but it feels like he's not really going into that territory. And he said in his set with Wanda that he wanted to work. He wanted to talk more about his parents, even though he only mentioned his mom once. So who knows what was on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. So in terms of the judges, Keenan says your biggest competition is you.
Yeah, which I don't. I mean, I guess it makes sense sort of a metaphysical level, but it doesn't make sense in like an actual competition based reality.
Right. Roseanne says, he's a monster comic. He blew the roof off.
And has a rubber face.
Yeah. And then Norm said, it was almost material free. You're so funny. And he also said that he has a manic sexuality?
A manic sexuality, which is a very... I think manic is probably not the term you want to hear before sexuality.
I think you take what you can get.
That's true. Norm also like pulled a Philip Shepherd and called him like Francisco.
Yes. So look at Francisco.
And he called him an HPOA, a hot piece of ass.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah, which I mean, I guess if he has the sex appeal from at least one of the judges, that might get him far into the competition.
Okay, so now we end up with our five people that get named in order that they call them out. Clayton English, Taylor Tomlinson, Francisco Ramos, Andy Erickson, and then the last spot. I know they cut to a shot of Miss Pat. They cut mm-hmm. to who else was on the bubble?
I think they cut to Brian Kellen as well. I think those were the only three left who had their sets really shown in full. Yeah,
but that's fine. I don't mind it being like, okay, here's seven people that are up for consideration. Five of them are going to get through.
Yeah, well, that's what. So I talked to Molly about. I asked that question specifically. I think that girl Priya was on a couple weeks ago, and we were kind of grousing about how she got a full video package and then ended up not getting through. And She said from an editing point of view, they want to do that just to kind of create this mentality of like, oh, even if you're shown a lot, you might get sent home. And it sort of works in a different construct here in the semifinals because you already know who everyone is. But I guess that's a reason why they decided to emphasize more people than just the five.
Okay, so there you go, Mike. Those are the first five people. So we end up with three men, two women. That sounds pretty good, pretty fair to me. You know, we've been very concerned with all the 40 people that were put through. We said that maybe only like 10 of them might have been women so far.
Yeah.
So at least they got the percentages up to 40%. I suspect it'll be again next week. We'll see three men and two women go through.
Well, it's interesting because last year, I think they only had two women. And I think with the top 10, it's usually like a two or three women. So we'll see how many get through next week. Also, surprising fact, no white males made it through this round.
Yeah. They've done a good job in the two seasons of the Wanda Sykes era in terms of diversity in the top 10.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think that makes for a stronger comedy in general because there's only so many, you know, white guys in their 20s and 30s that you can hear talk for an amount of time. So even if they have different points of view, but again, we'll see if the show sort of quote unquote makes up for that next week. And we'll see like five people go through, four white guys and one girl.
Okay. So we will see what happens next week. Mike, is there anybody for next week in round two of the semifinals that you're particularly looking forward to seeing for the second time?
I'm trying to remember. I remember really liking Moses Storm from the very first round last time.
Steve Moses.
He came back from Governor New York to come down and do some stand-up about trombonists. It went over really well. I remember liking Esther Pavitsky. I think she was the really like deadpan woman from the first hour. There are going to be so many like faces to associate with names that I'm totally forgetting about, but those are two that really stick out for me.
Yes. And I have a set of the Paula Deen deadpans at my house, which I actually had bought before this whole...
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm going to sell them on Craigslist.
Oh, well, you're going to... Don't invite anyone over to your house.
That's true.
Don't invite Junior Stopko.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Mike. What's the hashtag for this episode?
Do you want to go with hashtag KFCBC?
KFCBC, sure. Fair enough. All right. So we are very much looking forward to hearing your comments about this episode of Last Comic Standing at robhasawebsite.com. And then next week, we'll be back with round two of the semifinals. Mike, anything else you want to let people know about?
No.
Other than to follow Mike Bloom on Twitter?
Yes, thank you. Follow me on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Always working on podcasting stuff behind the scenes. But I can't stress enough how really good of an episode this was. And this just makes me really excited for not only the second part of the semifinals, but the rest of the season. Because I could take a look at even the five that made it through and say, I like these better than like Ida Rodriguez last year, Jimmy Schubert, Carlos Miller. So if they're being the top 10 from last year, that's a really good sign.
All right. Well, lots of fun here this week, Mike. Looking forward to it. Going to go have a nice lunch at KFC after this.
Oh, enjoy. Tell the cardboard cutout of Norm I say hi.
I will. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.